Actually, during its 54-year history, the School of the Americas has trained upwards of 60,000 Latin American soldiers. The SOA troops have used these skills to wage war against their own people, really.
From the studios of 96.3 FM Freak Radio in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, January 18th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll be speaking with Rebecca Johnson about the campaign to close the School of the Americas in Columbus, Georgia. We'll hear from Richard Becker, who reflects on 10 years of economic sanctions on Iraq, and later, Mark LaPalme of Danville, Kentucky, on his mission to shelter the homeless. Plus, this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, January 18th, 2001. On the afternoon of Saturday, January 13th, the Women for Peace and Justice for Vieques, Puerto Rico, staged an all-woman civil disobedience action at the U.S. recruitment station at Times Square in New York City. The action was in solidarity with the struggle to remove the U.S. Navy from the island of Vieques. The Navy has resumed bombing runs in recent days on the tiny island off the east coast of Puerto Rico. An unknown number of the women were arrested at Saturday's action and held in custody overnight. On the evening of Saturday, January 13th, activists from the Animal Liberation Front claimed responsibility for two broken windows at the Neiman Marcus store in Washington, D.C. Animal rights activists have targeted Neiman Marcus for its refusal to stop selling furs. In mid-December, protests were held outside Neiman Marcus stores nationwide. No arrests were reported in connection with Saturday's action. The Earth Liberation Front has officially claimed responsibility for burning an articulated loader and a pickup truck at Mellows Construction Corporation in Long Island, New York, on Sunday, January 14th. The damage was estimated at around $8,000. This is the 11th major action to be claimed by the ELF on Long Island in recent months. Meanwhile, the 17-year-old son of a New York City police sergeant has been identified as a suspect in connection with a string of arson fires claimed by the ELF. On Monday, agents from the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force raided the house where the teenager lives with his family, looking for evidence. The agents left with computer files, cans of red spray paint, and other material. An arrest had been expected after the raid, but for reasons that remained unclear, no arrest was made. AIDS activists disrupted the Senate Judiciary Committee's confirmation hearing of the controversial John Ashcroft on Tuesday, January 16th, immediately before his testimony was scheduled to begin. Ashcroft, nominated by George W. Bush for Attorney General, has faced intense scrutiny due to his conservative views and opposition to minorities for judicial and cabinet-level positions. The hearing was in chaos for over a minute as police struggled to silence and remove the source. "Dead addicts can't recover. Ashcroft kills," they shouted. According to a press release, the intent of the group was to highlight Ashcroft's aggressive stance against effective HIV prevention efforts like needle exchange programs. Capitol Police had to carry the four protesters out of the Senate chambers. And finally, on Wednesday, January 17th, nearly 150 people were arrested while marching on the streets of Bhopal, India. Protesters there were opposing the policies of the World Bank and Asia Development Bank, whose representatives were convened in Bhopal for a development forum. Many other protesters were detained at several places outside Bhopal and prevented from reaching the protest site. Those arrested were not released until the evening, and all refused bail. And those were headlines for the week ending Thursday, January 18th, 2001. On Wednesday, January 17th, the Department of Defense reopened the School of the Americas under the name Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. During its 54-year history, the SOA has trained over 60,000 Latin American troops in combat skills. SOA-trained troops have used these skills to wage war against their own people with disastrous results. The school's graduates continue to appear on lists of current human rights abusers from El Salvador to Colombia. People in more than 45 cities internationally held vigils and engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience actions on Wednesday to voice their opposition to the school. Rebecca Johnson is a 21-year-old college student from Ohio. She has been on a juice-only fast since the first of the year in an effort to draw attention to the SOA name change. I spoke with Rebecca about the ongoing campaign to close the school permanently. We discussed her reasons for the fast, as well as some of the recent actions at the Fort Benning, Georgia military base.
It's a really important time to draw attention to the School of the Americas and its new name. I'm down here right now because I want everyone to know, I want everyone in this country to know, and to not be fooled by the name change in the public relations campaign by the Army. We remember the history of atrocities committed by SOA graduates, and we're here, not just me, but all of the people that are fasting and vigiling for this month, to give a voice to those rendered voiceless by U.S. foreign policy.
Now, you talked about the SOA's graduates. Could you speak a little more in depth about what exactly people are being trained to do at this institute?
Actually, during its 54-year history, the School of the Americas has trained upwards of 60,000 Latin American soldiers. The SOA troops have used these skills to wage war against their own people, really. Hundreds of SOA graduates have been implicated in the disappearances, the massacres, and all sorts of human rights abuses in Latin America, especially in El Salvador and Colombia and Mexico even. And we remember Archbishop Oscar Romero, who was killed by SOA graduates. We remember the seven Jesuit priests, their housekeeper and their daughter, that were killed in El Salvador by SOA graduates. These are all important people to remember. And the School of the Americas, the Army, our government has never apologized for training those soldiers.
Recently, there's been a big campaign by the School of the Americas Watch, the organization that you're working with, to like a public campaign to bring attention to this issue, and thousands of people have demonstrated there in Columbus, Georgia. Could you talk a little bit about some of the recent events in November and since the beginning of the year 2001?
Sure. In November, we had almost 10,000 people down here, despite the cold and the wet in Georgia. Many people came down expecting sunny Georgia weather in November, but spirits were high. Everyone had a wonderfully powerful experience. We had 3,700 people cross the line this year, and many of those actually got arrested in process this year, which is something that hasn't happened before.
Physically incarcerated, you mean?
Well, on a military installation, they don't actually arrest people. They take them into custody. So they were taken into custody. They had their fingerprints taken, and over 1,200 people had that happen to them. And at the end of that, they were given ban and bar letters from the base saying that they're not allowed to set foot on Fort Benning again for 5 years at risk of going to jail for 6 months and having a $5,000 fine.
Wow.
And in the beginning of 2001, excuse me, we've started the year off right, we think, by drawing attention to the School of the Americas at the reopening ceremony yesterday, January 17th, by continuing our vigil at the gate, but also having seven people cross the line in a procession to three people to try to walk to the school and join the reopening ceremony, remembering the past by carrying a coffin of a child, and four people to block the road, symbolically closing off the school from new students to enter.
Among those four people who were locked arm in arm, I believe yourself and another individual had already received ban and bar letters. So what was the response by the military police there?
Well, Laurel Padgett Seekins and I both had ban and bar letters already, and we were given another ban and bar letter yesterday. The military doesn't have the authority to decide whether or not to prosecute us. The city prosecutor has that authority. So we probably won't find out for several months now if we're going to be prosecuted and sent to prison for what we did yesterday.
Hmm. In the meantime, you're still on a juice fast, is that correct?
Yes, this is the 18th day of my juice fast.
And you're also vigiling out in front of the gates daily?
Yes, daily from 8 in the morning to 11 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon to 5 p.m.
And how has that been going? Have you been receiving a lot of support?
Yes, especially after yesterday. We got a lot of press in the area, and this morning while we were out vigiling, many, many people stopped and said hello, offered us coffee. We're very moved by what we have done. And that feels wonderful, especially since we are at the inroad to an army installation. We didn't expect that kind of response.
Now, there's another protester there, a man named Josh, who has done a few banner hangings recently, and his trial's coming up next week, I believe. Could you talk a bit about his case, what kind of charges he's facing, and how the prosecution against him is going?
Sure. Actually, Joshua Zircon isn't here right now. His case was supposed to come up January 22nd to be prosecuted for trespassing and, I think, resisting arrest. But there's another case going on, and his has been postponed until March. So he will still be going to trial for that, the banner hanging that he did, but that's not going to be happening this month.
All right. Is there any way that folks can contact the organization that you're working with, the School of the Americas Watch?
Absolutely. There's a website, www.soaw.org. That's a wonderful resource for anyone who wants to know who the graduates of the School of the Americas were, who organizes around the School of the Americas in their area. All sorts of information is on that website. Down here at the FAST, if anyone is interested in contacting me, my email address is soavigil@aol.com, and that's a perfect way to get in touch with me if they have any questions or want to join on. I'm going to be here until the 31st of January. We commemorate the victims of the School of the Americas by fighting to close down the WISC, and we'd also demand a truth commission and the closure of all schools of assassins around the country. They're thinking of opening up one for Asian soldiers and one for African soldiers. And until all of these schools are shut down, the ghosts of the victims of the SOA graduates will not be able to rest in peace.
You can load us in your buses and behind your prison doors. When you think you've silenced us, there will be 5,000 more. We are gathered here today to put our bodies in harm's way at the School of Death and Shame. No more murder in our name. You dare to call them freedom fighters, call the butchers what you will, but from Hara to Allende, it is freedom that you kill. We are gathered here today, put our bodies in harm's way, at the School of Death and Shame. No more murder in our name. From Panama to Georgia, we'll be always in your sight. With so much blood upon your hands, how do you butcher sleep at night? We are gathered here today to put our bodies in harm's way at the school of death and shame. No more murder in our name. Word spreads from town to town. Every day a new voice sounding. Shut the school of torture down. We are gathered here today. Put our bodies in harm's way. At the school of death and shame. No more murder in our name. We are gathered here today. Put our bodies in harm's way. At the school of death and shame. No more murder in our name.
From the studios of Freak Radio, you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. That was David Rovics with this week's Spotlight Sound, song for the SOA, from his most recent release, Live at Club Passim. Tuesday, January 16th, marked 10 years since the start of the Gulf War. Although the formal Gulf War itself only lasted 42 days, sanctions and bombings in U.S. and British-imposed no-fly zones have killed between 1.5 and 2 million people over the past 10 years. UNICEF has stated that 1 in 10 children under the age of 1 will die before their first birthday as a direct result of the sanctions. Activists all over the U.S. held nonviolent direct actions to protest ongoing sanctions and bombings of the Iraqi people. In New York City, 16 people were arrested on the steps of the U.S. mission to the United Nations. Around 50 people gathered in San Francisco, California, and Freak Radio's Baby Greaser James was there to record the words of Richard Becker, the Western Regional Coordinator of the International Action Center.
Although the massive bombing stopped, the war against Iraq has never ended. People in the United States would be surprised, for the most part, to know that this war, a terrible, brutal, deadly war, has continued now for 10 years. For 10 years, after Iraq was driven out of Kuwait, a blockade against Iraq remains in place. And according to many, many international reports, every month, 6,000 to 8,000 Iraqi people die as a result of this blockade that is politely called sanctions. 6,000 to 8,000 every month. Think about what that means. That means that every day, every single day, 250 Iraqi people die as a result of the sanctions. And what makes this even more outrageous and cruel and a crime against humanity is that half of those people who die are children who are under the age of 5. Children who were not born when the Iraq War, when the Gulf War took place. 125 to 130 on average, children under the age of 5 die every single day in Iraq because of the sanctions and the blockade that continues. But that is not all. Several times a week, and it's almost not reported anymore in the media, it has become so routine. Several times a week, U.S. and British planes bomb Iraqi civilian targets in the northern and southern parts of Iraq. U.S. and British planes. And it is no coincidence that it was the U.S. and British who, until 1958, when a revolution took place in Iraq, a revolution that is today little remembered, it was the U.S. and the British that controlled Iraq, that ran Iraq, that owned all of Iraq's oil and exploited its oil fields without limit, who based their bombers and their troops in Iraq at that time. Is it a coincidence? No, it is no coincidence at all. The real objective of these sanctions, of this blockade, of this war that continues against the people of Iraq, is to make Iraq into a colony once again. All that we hear, the propaganda that it's for human rights or because of Saddam Hussein, no, those are lies. That is propaganda. That is a cover. The real objective of this cruel and inhuman, this barbaric policy of sanctions and blockade and bombing is to reduce Iraq once again to be a colony of the Western powers, and this time with the United States on top and Britain in the second place. That is why we are here to protest. We are here to demand an end to the sanctions, an end to this war that has gone on far, far, far too long and should never have started to begin with.
Mark LaPalme and his wife Tammy have been taking in homeless people in their Danville, Kentucky home since 1999. They have had up to 12 people sheltered at once. In October 2000, the Danville Planning and Zoning Board charged the couple with fines of up to $1,000 per day for each occurrence of over three non-blood relatives in their home. They were in court on Wednesday, January 17th, and Freak Radio's Robert Norse spoke with Mark LaPalme. He begins by explaining how this situation came to be.
It all started about a year and a half ago, and we really felt compelled to open our home to anybody that was in need. And it started with one man in particular in August of 1999. And since then, we've had over 70 people that have stayed with us, some families, some single people, abused women, or whatever the need was that we could meet with the size of the house that we have. We have about a 4,000-square-foot house. We have it's a single story with a full-size basement, and we decided that we were going to put some bedrooms in our basement, so we built seven bedrooms in our basement, and it's very nice down there. I mean, it's carpeted, and they're rather than doing a dormitory style, we figured we would give them some privacy, because a lot of these people are just families that have found themselves either out of work or displaced for some reason or another, and they've got doors, and what we would do is just house them and feed them and clothe them for up to 3 months for free. And in the course of the 3 months, what we would try to do is, a lot of them didn't have driver's licenses, so we would provide them transportation to try to get them a driver's license, and finding them jobs and getting them back on the payroll. And in the course of all of that, we also, when they moved out, most of the people had enough money to save, you know, save up enough money to get up and get on their own and get an apartment, but they wouldn't have enough money to buy a bed or a couch or chairs or tables. So whatever furniture was in the room that they were staying in, they could take. In October, we were served by Planning and Zoning a cease and desist order for violating R1 zoning. which basically says that we can't have any more than three non-blood relatives living in our home. And at times we've had up to 12 people with little children living here.
How do the police relate to you? Are they sympathetic? Have they become more hostile because of, or backed off because of the zoning complaint?
No, not at all. What has backed off is the support that we've gotten from, like, the Salvation Army. They used to supply the beds and the furniture that we gave away. They no longer do that. There is no homeless shelter within. There's one men's shelter 45 miles away from here, and there's a women's shelter approximately 75 or 80 miles away from here. So anybody that's, you know, from the area or wants to move to this area would have to move out in order to stay somewhere.
Now, where exactly is Danville for those of us sort of ignorant West Coasters here?
We're approximately 40 miles southwest of Lexington, Kentucky.
That's in the center of the state, or?
Center of the state.
What has been the reaction of local churches to your sheltering activities?
So far, to be honest with you, it hasn't been as positive as what I would have liked. Mm-hmm. Our church is supporting us a little bit. They help pay our water bill, and they still send people here. Obviously, I mean, most homeless people or people that are in need will call the church first, and the churches were referring people to us, but that has all pretty much stopped. As well as the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army, what they would do is give, you know, to soothe the heart, I guess, would give $30 or $60 voucher and send them to a local motel. But for most people, a day or two just isn't going to straighten out the problem. So I haven't had the reaction that I would have liked from the Christian community.
How about the media and, say, social service agencies? Have you gotten any more positive reactions?
Social services actually took my children out of school and investigated them because of the type of people they said that we have in the house.
What type of people are those?
Well, we don't have the ability to do background checks, although we do not in any way endorse or would like to harbor any criminals. When Salvation Army was sending people to us, they were checking the criminal background out. But being that sometimes a lot of our referrals come from Bluegrass Community Crisis Center, we get some people that are obviously depressed about their situation. So they felt, social services felt like we were stepping into their job, and actually took my children out of school and interrogated them, and then came to the house and asked us a bunch of questions, and we have not lost our children yet, but I guess that was a possibility.
So the courts, I should say the zoning commission or the zoning board took you to court, the zoning department, and are trying to get massive fines from you.
Yes.
For, I don't know, being too concerned with caring for other people. What's behind this in your mind? Is this some sort of, is it a personal vendetta by a few individuals who don't like you? Is it a bureaucratic process by some people who are just hooked on regulations? Is there some other motivation? What is your sense of that?
Honestly, I really don't know. What I do know is that everybody, when I call Planning and Zoning to try to find out who were the people that were complaining, because if I live in a fairly upscale neighborhood in town, and if you were to drive by the house, you would never notice what goes on in the house. It looks as beautiful on the outside, and it is just as quiet out here as it was before I moved in. And the house is still immaculate. So I asked them who were our persecutors, who was making complaints, and Planning and Zoning told me that they were all anonymous.
You think the neighbors are annoyed with you? Maybe have you gotten any sense of that?
Yes, sir. We also have, every other week, we have a church service at our house. We get together and we fellowship. We have cook hot dogs and hamburgers, and we, you know, we sing a little bit. And they have charged me with having church without a permit in my home.
Has the ACLU or any religious organization concerned with the rights of folks under the First Amendment to be have free exercise of religious worship step forward to try to help you in any way, or have you been in touch with them?
The Rutherford Group, the Rutherford Institute, and the ACLJ had accepted the case on the same day back in October.
ACLJ is?
Is Jay Sekulow's group.
Which is not
from American Civil Liberties and Justice or something like that. Tell you the truth, I really don't know.
Okay, go ahead.
But they had accepted the case on the same day, and in my excitement that they would even consider this, I went and I chose the Rutherford Group. But they have since backed out of it because they feel like it would not be money well spent. I called the ACLJ back up after the Rutherford Group had gone ahead and secured me an attorney and actually went through the first part of my plea, which we pled not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped out. I called the ACLJ up, and now they have money that's allocated to different areas, and they don't want me.
You have an attorney at the present time?
I still have the attorney that was secured by the Rutherford Group, but he is a local attorney and readily admits that he's not prepared to fight this fight.
Now, you went to a court hearing on January 17th. What was that about?
What I was told, and I'm not real familiar with this process, but it was a pretrial. And all we did was ask for a trial by jury.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all that happened. We were scheduled for a March 14th and a March 15th court date.
What are you going to do if they tell you to stop, do you know?
We're going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
We just feel it in our hearts, and we know it's the right thing to do. These people have been so great to us, and it's been such a blessing to us to have met them, and I just, you know, we've been called to do it, and there's no stopping that.
And that's all for this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on Micropower 102.9 FM, BLR 104.1 FM, Free Radio Madison, 87.9 FM, Radio Free Cascadia, 98.5 FM, and on the web at unbrokenchain.net and PerumpRadio.com. The Weekly Freak Show can be reached at P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061, or send email to frsc@microradio.net. That's frsc@microradio.net. And don't forget, you can always listen to all the great shows on Freak Radio by pointing your browser to www.microradio.net/frsc. Once again, that's www.microradio.net/FRSC. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For Robert Norse, Baby Greaser James, and everyone at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.